HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Republican George Santos is no longer a congressman, and New York will now hold a special election. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
George Santos began putting on his coat even as the vote to expel him was still underway, and then bolted.
Mr. Santos, what's your reaction to the expulsion?
Chased by reporters and riding off from the Capitol in a Jaguar as a former congressman. His final remark, reportedly, "Why would I want to stay here? To hell with this place."
In light of the expulsion of the gentleman from New York, Mr. Santos, the whole number of the House is now 434.
Dozens of his fellow Republicans joined nearly all Democrats, voting to make Santos one of only three U.S. House members to be expelled since the U.S. Civil War.
A judge is letting the election interference case against former President Trump move forward, rejecting claims of presidential immunity. Airstrikes resume in the Gaza Strip as the ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war ends. CBS's Lilia Luciano in Tel Aviv.
Just in this first day, the renewed air assault killed close to 200 people, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. Omar Harouz, searching for his family in despair, said, "We seek martyrdom. This is what we want. May Allah bring his vengeance upon you. We are not afraid of you."
Retired Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, the first female justice on that court, has died at 93. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
Somebody who was not a pushover, as somebody who had had a legislative experience and who on the court could very well navigate her position. Her position at the time was seen as conservative. Today, I think she would be seen as a moderate.
The man accused of stabbing former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin faces attempted murder charges. CBS's Wendy Gillette.
Federal prosecutors say 52-year-old John Turskak stabbed Derek Chauvin 22 times with an improvised knife in the law library at a federal prison in Tucson where he's an inmate. They say he told correctional officers he would have killed Chauvin if they didn't respond so quickly. The former officer was convicted of murdering George Floyd. Turskak told the FBI he stabbed Chauvin on Black Friday as a symbolic connection to Black Lives Matter. Wendy Gillette, CBS News.
A federal appeals court rules that Texas must remove floating border barrier. Reporter Chris Fox.
Back in June, Texas Governor Greg Abbott first deployed the 1,000-foot floating border barrier to repel migrants from crossing into Eagle Pass, Texas. Lawyers for the U.S. Department of Justice took Texas to court to remove them, arguing they obstructed free navigation of the Rio Grande and were in violation of a longstanding federal law.
This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
Give the gift that's hard.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's...
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehoe. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Senate Democrats have elected Dianne Hesselbein as their new minority leader. Hesselbein was elected to represent Middleton in the Senate last fall after a decade of serving in the Assembly. Earlier this week, Melissa Agard stepped down as minority leader after announcing her run for Dane County Executive. Hesselbein beat Senators Kelda Royce and Jeff Smith in a vote for minority leader on Friday. The Wisconsin Supreme Court is expected to rule soon on the state's legislative maps. Jeff Mandel of the liberal firm Law Forward says it's about voters choosing their lawmakers and not the other way around.
If we get back to the feedback mechanisms of democracy, that's the win. It's not about which party wins in 2024. I just think that's overly reductive.
Mandel spoke at a WISP politics gathering on Thursday. I'm Nate Wegehoe, Civic Media News.
The Bucks lose in Chicago. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks were down by 12, but came back again in the fourth quarter. A nice three-point shot from Brook Lopez to take the lead. But Alex Caruso hits from three at the buzzer. The Bulls go on to win 120-113. It was Milwaukee's first overtime game this season. College hoops, it's the Wisconsin Badgers taking on the Marquette Golden Eagles tomorrow in the Kohl Center. Tip-off 11:30 a.m. Marquette ranked third in the nation. NFL, the Packers and the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. Packers defensive coordinator Joe Barry on facing Kansas City.
They're the defending world champs. I mean, they're going to get everyone's absolute best every single week, which you would think that would be the case regardless, but they're not going to sneak up on anybody and surprise anybody.
This will be the Chiefs' Patrick Mahomes' first time ever playing at Lambeau Field.
Going to Green Bay, playing in a great environment, which I'm really excited about, against a team that's playing really good football right now.
That's Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low in the low 20s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, a high in the upper 30s. Snow showers developing Saturday night, continuing into Sunday morning. Mostly cloudy and upper 30s for the high Sunday afternoon. It's 24 right now.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. From Lake Wissota State Park and the Pablo Center, the entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown. 93.5, The Tap.
Focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program, the last of our live broadcast big programs. Lots to get to, lots to talk about, memories, thoughts, all kinds of stuff. And hey, George Santos was expelled from Congress for having 68 fewer felony indictments than Donald Trump. It's a start of a day. It is a start of a day. But, you know, today a little personal, you know, because we're in a transition moment and, you know, looking forward to the new year, looking forward to a new beginning, to growing in our new space over at Free Speech TV. And I'm excited about it, but it harkens back for me to 2010. I was in this moment in 2010 because, look, I had been in the trucking industry for a whole bunch of years. I didn't know that the company that I had worked for at the time, I didn't think they were going to make it to the new year. They were in a whole bunch of financial trouble. Bankruptcy was looming. There was all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I started thinking about this today as Yellow Freight is in the news. And again, I don't know how many lives this cat might have, but maybe a way to resurrect Yellow Freight from the ashes of bankruptcy. Now, I thought about this, you know, back in 2003, I was working for a company called Roadway Express. Roadway Express was profitable. They were free of debt. They basically owned everything. Old school kind of business principles. You buy equipment, you use it until you cannot use it any longer. You buy your terminals, you buy your stuff, you invest in your people. In fact, Roadway used to brag about the fact that they had a 1% turnover rate of their unionized workforce. They had dedicated people who stayed. And that really was across the industry. You got one of those jobs like I did in the early 90s and thought, hey, you know, this is going to be where I do my time. You know, and in 2003, that all got shaken up because Yellow ended up the number two carrier in the country, buying Roadway Express, the number one company, for about $1.1 billion. It was a hostile takeover. And the idea was, is we're going to consolidate, have a super union company and, leverage over the entire industry. In 2005, they went out and they acquired USF, another freight company, for $1.47 billion. They were on an acquisition spree and put themselves heavily in debt. 2006, they changed their names. Because here's the weird thing. It turned out that people were very brand specific. If you shipped with Yellow, you didn't ship with Roadway. If you shipped with Roadway, you didn't ship with Yellow. And city drivers would go into customers' docks and go, hey,
Get that yellow trailer out of here. Get that roadway. I don't ship with them. And they had a lot of problems. They had a lot of problems with the synergy part of this. And they struggled. And they really did. And they were heavily in debt. They changed their name in 2006 to YRC Worldwide. They went on more of a spending spree in 2007, bought a Chinese logistics company, all kinds of stuff. They were going to make a super company out of all of this. And, you know, truth be told, may have worked. Might have worked had it not been for the Bush collapse of 2008, which was an absolutely killer because they were massively in debt, whereas Roadway was never in really that much debt. And when recessions hit, they always thrived because they didn't have overcapacity. They packed trailers to you couldn't get anything more in it. And what you had was now a bloated company. He had all of this redundancy that they couldn't figure out how to integrate. And understand, they bought the company in 2003, didn't really put the two companies really together until March of 2009. And it nearly led to their bankruptcy in 2009, which eventually is what led me at the end of 2010 to look elsewhere. Because in early 2009, we as employees, as Teamster members, we're asked to take a 10% pay cut. Got to take a pay cut. Concessions. Company's in trouble. Save us. And in exchange for that, we'll give you 15% of the company. The membership voted on it, went for it. A couple months later, they came back and said, well, you know, hey, that wasn't enough. We need more. They got another 5% and 18-month pause in pension contributions just to get done. Now, again, I left at the end of 2010 seeing the writing on the wall. I didn't think they'd make it to the new year. So 13 years later, they finally filed bankruptcy. Now, what's weird is, you know, all during this period, the company was making money. They had a long-time dedicated workforce. They had, you know, good, solid accounts. Problem? Criminally mismanaged. And what's interesting is you hear management talk about, well, it's the union workers. No. Criminally mismanaged. This was a profitable company that they destroyed. And understand, Yellow was a company in massive debt when they took on even more debt. And what they did was, is they ended up, I put it this way. It's like you buy someone's house and then you sell off all of their furniture to pay your bills. You sell off then the shed in the back and then the driveway. They were basically selling everything off just to service the massive debt that they took on. And look, I get the idea at the start that you consolidate and you take on more market share. I don't know why the government allowed it to happen. I thought it was a mistake back then. But it was allowed to happen. And it's now cost thousands of people their livelihoods. And over the years, again, you know, thousands of workers gave up massive concessions. When you stop and think about it, Yellow was able to claw back at least a decade of wage increases. They destroyed pension security. They didn't get the health care that they wanted to destroy, too. And you look at this and you go, this whole story is corporate greed and corporate mismanagement, horrible mismanagement. And now they've filed bankruptcy. And now there's a moment where, what do you do with the remnants of the company? They filed bankruptcy in Delaware, obviously. And their plan is to sell off all of the terminals and the assets. And so why? So they can raise money for themselves. They can pocket money for themselves. Because understand, just before they filed bankruptcy, according to Bloomberg News, the executives paid themselves $4.6 million in bonuses. And I know, they had to get the bite at the apple before they filed bankruptcy, because in 2005, Congress said, no, you can't do that anymore. No. So, of course, before the bankruptcy, they're going to line their pockets. But it got me thinking about, you know, when I first started in the industry in the late 80s, and you saw a lot of bankruptcies happen. And the model had been, and the joke among the workforce was, whenever you saw them start painting things, like the lunchroom or painting the lines in the parking lot or bringing in new equipment or, you know, fixing things that, the bathrooms, for instance. When you saw upgrades happen, pack your stuff because they're probably going to file bankruptcy. And in talking with some of the people who I know who were there, you started to see new equipment rolling in. You started to see capital improvements. You started to see stuff because what they understood is, and this is what the bankruptcy laws allow for, I guess, all of that stuff gets just written off. It's gone. Whoever did those service, you're out of luck. Sorry, buddy. Better luck next time. And then they get to sell off all those assets. So we're in a moment right now where the alternatives are break this company up even further into smaller pieces, sell off every truck, trailer, dolly, every dock, every shop, tool, everything. Sell it all off, liquidate, let the vultures come in and pick the bones. Or, and this is incredible, or you allow our friend Sarah Riggs Amico and her company, Jack Cooper, to buy it up and put it back into operation, which I got to tell you has never been done, at least not that I can find, that a company went completely, a trucking company went completely kaput. They shut down operations. They fired all the people. They can't even find the keys to the trucks at this point. And then someone came in and swooped in and said, hey, I want to make this a company that does great work, but hires people and gives them good jobs. I can't believe, and this is one of these moments where I go, I cannot believe that it's even a question. But weirdly enough, because of the $700 million that the Trump administration gave to Yellow back during the Trump years, the loan that came out of that and the repayment schedule, there's some question whether legally our government can let those payments go for a little bit longer down the road. They're due now. Sarah Riggs Amico and her folks want a couple of years to get some cushion to be able to make those payments. Not say forgive it, but give it a little time for us to get back in operation and making some revenue so we can pay it back. Also, you've got the pension fund, the Teamsters pension fund going, well, I don't know that we can because of the law, except less than we might be able to get out of bankruptcy, which you go, well, where in the bankruptcy line are you? Workers generally fall to the bottom. So there's a lot of stuff here where you just go, are our rules so screwed up that they are really that stacked against working people, against job creators like Sarah, who want to make sure that there are good family sustaining wages for workers? It's quite remarkable to me. And today on the program, we're going to talk with Sarah and find out how we can help. I mean, for me, if the last thing I can do is figure out a way to help to get, 10, 15, 20,000 of my Teamster brothers and sisters back to work, that's what we have to do. And I think Sarah's got a plan that will help move in that direction. And I'm sure she's got some ideas on what we can do. But it's amazing to me how horrible mismanagement always trickles down to the employees getting the short end of the stick. But maybe this time, just once, maybe the little guy comes out somewhat, not ahead, but somewhat close. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know how the other day I talked about Republican message discipline? This is what I was talking about. This is a perfect example of Republicans sticking to the message. You may remember hearing about Joni Ernst, this senator from Iowa who evidently was choking and may have choked to death had it not been for Rand Paul, who is, I guess he's something of a doctor, ophthalmologist, I think, but performed the Heimlich maneuver and saved her life, expelled whatever was in her throat and saved her. Well, she tweets out, can't help but choke on the woke policies Dems are forcing down our throats. Thanks, Dr. Rand Paul. So that woke chicken that she had evidently was choking her. Oh, message discipline. Let's go to the phones. Got Steve on line one. Steve, how are you today?
Yes, I'm fine. And let me begin by saying, you know, great show. I, like a lot of other people, have really come to appreciate it. It's an important voice out there. And the WCPT here in Chicago, we have a lot of diverse voices, but you know, there was no one like yourself, and people talking about kitchen table issues, about labor, you know, and that's really important because it really is the core of the Democratic Party, and it's how you appeal to people, and it's what wins elections. I know people like to think that foreign policy issues and social issues and so many other things win elections. And in the end, you know, as James Carville said, you know, it's the economy, stupid. You know, people vote their bottom line. Can they pay their rent? Can they buy the groceries? Can they pay their bills and so forth? And I'm glad that you talk about those kinds of things. Having said that, I couldn't agree with you more with regard to, you know, what's going on, what's been going on in this country with regard to our economic system. Yeah, you know, the right in this country took advantage of the fact that coming out of COVID, you know, we had supply chain short issues. We had issues with, there was going to be inflation, obviously, as more money was chasing fewer goods. But, you know, make no mistake, that explains part of what inflation was. Another bigger part, in many cases, was simply price gouging.
Yep.
You know, I mean, Kimberly Clark, in a three-month period, you know, between April and June, raised prices by 6% on Huggies diapers. So just to be clear, I'm not talking about things like something that you don't need, like new earbuds or something to listen to your favorite stuff. These are diapers. So they raised in 3 months the cost of these things by 6% during a time when their costs went down $75 million to actually produce them. So, yeah, I mean, the only thing that you can explain that with is to say, you know what, they knew full well that Americans have gotten used to inflation at being at significant levels. And, hey, if we can just pile onto that, no one will bother to look into it. And that, unfortunately, is what's happened. And you were absolutely right with regard to, you know, what happened in the beginning of the 1970s and really took off and went on steroids in the 80s and 90s, takeovers and mergers and so forth. And for decades, we had built this illusion that somehow if you had a good job and you were in a good union and you had a good contract, you were set. Well, nobody read the fine print because it turns out that if you were subject to a hostile takeover or the company declared bankruptcy because, you know, they were mismanaged and so forth, well, guess what? What you were expecting in terms of a pension may be cut in half. You know, the new owners are obligated to meet perhaps 50% of the pension obligation in terms of the contract in the event that something like this happens. And that's it. That will buy them out for 50 cents on the dollar. I mean, I don't know about you, but if your plans for retirement are cut in half in terms of what you're going to be living off of, that might be a problem. And, you know, this idea that things just get resolved at some point, that we had a labor movement in the early part of the 20th century and then the middle part of the 20th century, and that everything was solved, everything was resolved. No, these people do not sleep. The ownership class doesn't sleep. Instead, they said to themselves, we're going to organize and we're going to claw back those things that we lost, and we're going to undermine the things that they gained in terms of labor laws and protection and all of these other things that people had come to expect. And that's why you don't have, you know, very many people with pensions any longer. Yeah, you want to retire? Well, we've got a 401k plan, you know, but yeah, we're not, that defined pension thing, no, we're not going to do that. And, you know, and in terms of real income, basically we're stagnant. You know, from 1980 until today, the average household income hasn't moved in terms of real earnings. Now, the people at the top 10% moved nicely. The people in the top 1%, hugely. The people in the top 1/10 of 1%, extraordinarily well during that period of time. So, you know, and I can't speak for everyone. I'm not a socialist. I don't want to seize Elon Musk's company or Google or Microsoft or Apple or anything else. But I just think that if you make a certain amount of money, you should pay a little bit more because you benefited more from what this society has to offer.
Yep.
And to quote Bill Gates, you know, if I had been born in Bangladesh, this wouldn't have worked. You know, the reason that I was able to make so much money was because we sold a product that allowed people to utilize computers and go online, which is what they wanted to do with their computer. That's what most people do. And the only way that that was possible was because of the infrastructure that was in place long before I was born. And that made it possible.
Yep.
So again, you know, we're just asking you to pay a little bit more. And you know, Warren Buffett famously denoted, you know, I'm paying less of a percentage of what I made last year than my secretary, and that's problematic to say the least.
Absolutely, right there with you, Steve. Appreciate the call, buddy. Good talking to you.
Take care.
Thank you, and I appreciate the kind words. But to his point, you know, CEO compensation from 1978 until I think it was 2019. Up 940%. That of the worker, the average typical worker, up 12%. And you go, you know, how is that, you know, how is that good? How is that helpful? And look, you know, I go back to my example of Yellow Freight. The CEOs, they didn't take pay cuts. The CEOs didn't see their wages diminished, but they continually went back to the workforce and said, hey, hand out. We need concessions. We need help. We need to cut into your pension. We need to cut into your wages, your standard of living. And what's frustrating and angering is that's not the only time this has happened. We see it time and time again. And as I've said, you know, my hope is that we as working people, that we just, you know, say enough is enough already. And we do come back together like my grandparents' generation did. You know, they didn't always agree on everything. But the important stuff, what you put on the table, what comes in that keeps a roof over people's heads, that they were pretty unified on. Fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities for their children, all on the same line. So, you know, that's to me where I'm hoping this works. And I appreciate Steve's comments about this program being one of the few that talks about the stuff that we do, because I think this is the important stuff. You know, I say all the time, we got to start fighting for things that make our lives better and stop fighting over nonsense. We got to start getting back to what is going to make society and our opportunities and our families stronger and better, as opposed to just the craziness that we've been saddled with. It's time. And, you know, I look at our mainstream corporate-controlled media, of which I'm hoping we can, when we move to free speech TV, have an opportunity to get a message to a wider audience. I'm hoping that we do some things that are going to give us some really good chances to interact. And with all the new technology, we're not going away. And I want our listeners here on stations that across the country to go, hey, look, you know, we want to hear from you. I want to hear folks email me. I want people to email. I want people to pay attention. Let's quick go to the phones. And I got Johnny on line two. Johnny, how are we doing today, Johnny?
Real good now. I can hear you swell on my fancy smartphone, which I thought wasn't too smart a few days ago, but you're coming in loud.
Outstanding. What's on your mind, brother?
Well, two things. I'm glad to hear that you are expanding your program on free speech TV within the coming days or weeks. That's good. Both morning and afternoon. That's really good because, as I was telling your call screener, the labor message has to go out to this country. It's not being done so, and we desperately need that. And you're the guy to do it.
Because well, thank you for
engaging,
that.
You're inspired and inspiring. And I just want to know that it feels good when I tune into you and I hear and see your message. And by the way, when the earlier caller mentioned the movie Gordon Gekko, that's true. You know, this problem is the artist in the eye of the beholder. So what the artist intends is not always the outcome when it's consumed on the other side, the communication being what it is. And here's a good case in point. That World War II movie that, what's his name, the guy who did the what's that actor's name? I'm drawing a blank. My 64-year-old mind is betraying me. Saving Private Ryan.
Okay.
Who is the lead in that?
Tom Hanks.
Who's the lead in Saving? Tom Hanks, right. Tom Hanks. So, you think that Tom Hanks could feel regret for his career, that he thinks that because Private Ryan might be misinterpreted by people as a pro-war movie, that he should not have done that? No. Because there are lots of people who saw that movie and they took the...
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
CBS News Brief. The House expels Republican George Santos after a scathing ethics committee report. GOP Congressman Anthony D'Esposito of New York.
It's a sad day for this institution. It's a sad day for America. And it's a sad day for the 3rd Congressional District, who have now for 11 months not had proper representation.
Palestinian officials claim Israeli strikes have killed at least 178 people throughout Gaza since the ceasefire ended. The BBC's Paul Adams.
Amid disagreements over the release of hostages, Israel and Hamas blamed each other for breaking the terms of the truce. Late in the evening, reports from Khan Yunis in the southern Gaza Strip spoke of some of the heaviest bombardment yet.
Britain's King Charles tells the COP28 UN climate summit that the dangers of climate change are no longer a distant risk.
I pray with all my heart that COP28 will be another critical turning point towards genuine transformational action.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehoe. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The secretary of the host committee for the 2024 Republican National Convention in Milwaukee is stepping down. Milwaukee Public Schools cut ties with Gerard Randall's Milwaukee Education Partnership 2 weeks ago. School board members say it isn't clear exactly what the nonprofit did with the school district's money. It also appears Randall lied about prominent people in Wisconsin serving on his leadership team. The city of Wausau is filing a lawsuit against 15 manufacturers of PFAS Forever chemicals. The lawsuit also names 61 major insurance companies that insured the manufacturers. Wausau has some of the worst PFAS contamination in the entire state, with the chemical found in all of the city's drinking water wells. Wausau officials say they hope to recoup some of the millions of dollars they've spent so far to provide safe drinking water and to try and clean up their water wells. I'm Nate Wiggehoe, Civic Media News.
Lexi spent more than 6 years in foster care.
Before I was adopted, I felt alone.
With help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption, Lexi now has a forever family and the foundation for a bright future.
Adoption changed me for the better. I feel like I can be whoever I want to be.
You can help find permanent homes for children still lingering in foster care. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low in the low 20s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, a high in the upper 30s. Snow showers developing Saturday night, continuing into Sunday morning. Mostly cloudy and upper 30s for the high Sunday afternoon. It's 24 right now.
One in four Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at EasterSeals.com.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at BelongingBeginsWithUs.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Tell a friend what's on tap. There's a new station in town with conversation about Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley. This is 93.5 The Tap.
The Penn Ridge School Board blew for the first time in years. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help push back against right-wing politicizers of your school district, contact campaignsharedfuture.org.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's rare, in fact, it's unprecedented, that I would quote Senator Josh Hawley in any way, shape, or form. But the senator wrote a letter saying, hey, yellow freight, it's a common sense step to keep yellow trucks on the road and keep its workforce gainfully employed. Now, these are union workers that he's saying, you know, it's common sense that you get those trucks back on the road and those union jobs back in place. Rare. In fact, unprecedented for me to ever say something about Josh Hawley that doesn't, well, this is a positive thing. It tells me that there's hope in this moment. And here to share some thoughts on how, in a, I got to tell you, historic way, I've seen a lot of trucking companies go out throughout my years. I've never seen one come back from the dead. But if anyone can do it, it's going to be my next guest, who is the executive chairperson of Jack Cooper. They are the country's largest auto carrier corporation. Sarah Riggs-Amico, I appreciate you taking time for us.
It's great to be with you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, as I said, I never quote Josh Hawley, but it is common sense. It does make sense that if someone can make a go of it, if someone has a plan that is workable to put people back to work, to create jobs that are going to be family sustaining jobs and save a company, we should be doing that, no?
That's right. And look, I think what it tells you is this isn't a political issue. This is about the jobs. The one thing that's still sacred, we can all agree on across the political spectrum, is the dignity of a good paying job and what that means for families, particularly at this time of the year.
Now, before we get into all the details and stuff, there's some legalities here, as I understand. The Treasury Department, with this $700 million loan that Trump gave them, that I argue they squandered and criminally mismanaged, but that's a whole argument for another day outside of your purview, I'm sure. What's it going to take to get them to be able to maybe restructure, to move that around? Let's start there.
Yeah. So look, I think, first of all, I went to business school and not law school, so I wouldn't have to answer technical legal questions that way. But I will say that the CARES Act loan that was extended to Yellow, whether or not you agree it was made correctly, it was made with the intent of protecting and preserving jobs. And right now we are bringing forward with Next Century Logistics what is the only going concern bid that would bring back tens of thousands of jobs for people who lost their paycheck when Yellow closed its doors.
Now, one of the things that I found that was, I guess, troubling to me, because your bid for Yellow to take this didn't go to a bankruptcy court, didn't go to the government agency. It actually went to the people who destroyed this company, which seems really kind of weird to me. Why did you, I don't know if this is a strategic thing, I don't know if it's a legal thing, but why on God's green earth would you have to go through the people who screwed this up?
Yeah, well, the process in a Chapter 11, the way that it works is the management and the company has a lot of say, as do, of course, the debtor in possession or DIP lenders. They've got a lot of say about how this goes forward. And so our effort is not to weigh into the politics of how they got there, but to give the company a lifeline to exit and bring back those jobs. And by the way, not just bring back 20,000 jobs or more, but also to relieve pressure on America's battered supply chains. We're still coming out of what's been a really difficult period, as you know, in the supply chain universe. Customers, when Yellow closed its door, 9% of the LTL capacity in the United States shut down with it. Customers took double-digit price increases. They found themselves scrambling to ship the products Americans love. And we all know that those transportation costs are a major driver of prices for consumers and inflation in our economy. So there's a lot at stake here that I think affects people even outside of the transportation and trucking space.
Now, you said a moment ago they filed, you know, I guess it's Chapter 11 bankruptcy, right?
That's correct.
That's not Chapter 7. Chapter 11, as I understand, and again, I'm not a legal expert, and I'll pretend to play one on TV or radio, but isn't that reorganization? Isn't that the intent of, hey, we're gonna reinvent the widget and keep it moving, not destroy it and sell it off in pieces, which I guess is supposed to start happening any moment now.
Yes, that's correct. So a Chapter 11 gives a company a chance to restart and to restart profitably, to protect and preserve jobs and the operation, the ongoing operation of a business. It's a tool that when used correctly can give people a fresh start. And it means a lot, not just to the companies and their customers, but of course to workers as well, particularly in union companies. And particularly in these days where those jobs with great wages and great benefits and the dignity of collective bargaining rights are increasingly difficult to find in many places. So, you know, it is puzzling to me that there weren't more options for this business to be saved. And that's exactly why we jumped in. So we're following the process. We are presenting a fully funded bid. We are asking the United States Treasury and the unsecured creditors to help us revive this business. And we're also being very clear that we are the only option to do that. In every other instance, if our bid fails, this company will be liquidated and sold off for parts. And the 28,000 jobs that disappeared when Yellow closed its doors will never come back. And to me, as you and I have talked over the years, that's always been the core at why I do what I do. We work exclusively for the last 15 years in restructuring Teamster trucking companies, saving Teamster trucking jobs, doing what everybody else thought was impossible. Remember, we got into the auto hauler business when, 2008 and 2009, we bought Jack Cooper a month before GM and Chrysler bankruptcies. So we understand how to do a white knuckle operator's turnaround. This is not financial engineering. We're not coming in to just simply convert debt into equity. We are coming in to fundamentally restart the operation of this business in a way that increases the level of service to its customers, increases wages and pension contributions to its union workers, and saves and protects thousands and thousands of jobs. That's a worthy cause. That's something I want to be a part of. And that's the reason we've done everything we've done in the trucking industry.
No, and you've done incredible stuff. And look, my hope is that you're able to pull this off, because I know, I know hundreds of people who have been affected by this, personally. Like I said, the place that I worked, there's 800 people there who lost their jobs in this closure. And to see vultures come in and pick the bones of what was a company that did provide, good family sustaining wage jobs is really painful. But you mentioned something there a second ago. You're not getting into this for the whole debt for equity thing. How much of that plays into the situation we're in? Because I said, look, the reality is this company was very profitable. They were making money. I know they took on a lot of debt, but there were years that they did really well. I'm arguing, criminal mismanagement on the highest levels, which is why I find it very odd that the guy who drove it into bankruptcy is the restructuring officer.
Yeah, look, bankruptcy for folks that don't work in turnarounds and restructuring, as I have for the past decade and a half, it is not a logical place. It's not the place that functions the way you think it does. There are plenty of people who make an awful lot of money in bankruptcy, and they're usually the advisors that are helping take these companies through. But that's also necessary to navigate the process. Chapter 11 does allow the executives prior to the filing to control the process, and that's fine. I mean, the hope is that they're doing the best they can to maximize the recovery of the estate and give the company fair and full consideration of any opportunities to have a plan of reorganization where they can restart the business and protect those and preserve those jobs. And I think that's really the thing to watch for here. So for the, you've got a lot of drivers, a lot of members that listen to your show, Rick. I think if they want to see Yellow make a comeback, they should be sharing their story. They should take to Twitter. They should take to Facebook. They should call into shows. They should write to their congressional representatives or senators and say why this matters to their family. All jobs in trucking, as you know, are not created equal. Union health, welfare, and pension matters. My family, as you know, has been on team care, Teamster healthcare. This is a great way to protect the kind of jobs that talking heads are usually only talking about, but never actually investing in creating. And what we have right now, I think, is extraordinary. You have, you know, Josh Hawley and Senator Marshall from Kansas and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Sherrod Brown and Amy Klobuchar. I mean, look at the coalition of people from across the political spectrum who've raised their hand and said, guys, hold on a minute. We passed the CARES Act to help protect and preserve jobs. We passed these acts, the American Rescue Plan. We wanted to make these loans and support these businesses through extraordinary times during the pandemic, because we understand what the dignity of that good paying job means to those families. And that is utterly apolitical. It's all about what's best for working families in this country. And I think that's something worth fighting for. I mean, look, we as you know, we love these kind of stories. My family and I have come in to companies where everyone else has given up. And that's exactly what's happened with Yellow. But this is something worth fighting for. 28,000 people who lost their paychecks are worth fighting for. Jobs that put health care and retirement and pensions for families are worth fighting for. And the fact that we were able to do that in partnership with the union, look at what you've got here. This is the kind of story this country needs right now. We've got Republicans and Democrats on the same page. We've got management and labor on the same page, because in the end, we all want the same thing, which is for our kids to have more opportunity and more financial stability than we have.
No, that's exactly what I say all the time. If we're going to reunite this country, we need to reunionize it. And you're doing a huge part and a huge service in getting that message out. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sarah Riggs Amico. She's the executive chairwoman with Jack Cooper, the nation's largest auto hauling company and a Teamster company at that. Let me ask you about the Teamster's response in this, because, look, you know, I went back through the whole Yellow acquisition of Roadway, and, you know, when they bought up, you know, New Penn and Holland and all of this, and the debt they took on, and ultimately the massive concessions that workers gave, the, you know, a tax to their pensions, all kinds of stuff. And I'm curious, the relationship between you and the Teamsters, I know, have been very good in your companies. What kind of actions, what kind of words, what kind of, you know, things are going on with you with this deal? Are they enthusiastic about this? Are there hiccups? What's going on?
You know, I think the best place to start any relationship, whether you're talking about your labor union or whether you're talking about your kids or your spouse or your friends, is honest communication. And so the very first thing that we did is sit down and say, what would it look like to try to save this business? It couldn't operate the same way that it was operating. You know, you named a lot of marquee. Yellow is a venerated brand that a lot of people have extraordinary affection for, particularly in transportation and logistics. And they had some marquee acquisitions. You mentioned New Penn, you mentioned Holland, Redaway. These were brands that have incredible brand equity in the market and have a lot of love amongst the industry, but they were never really fully integrated. And that's not my opinion. We know that because Yellow, prior to filing for bankruptcy, was pushing a plan that they called One Yellow, which was trying to better integrate those operating companies. So the first thing that we did was have an honest dialogue about how would we get to a more efficient operating network footprint? How do you improve your customer service, right? At the end of the day, this is a multi-channel business, an LTL. You have your local channel, you've got your 3PL channel, you've got your central sort of HQ decision makers for the corporate accounts, the big ones. You're talking about 150,000 or more customers across the portfolio of revenue. You've got to think very strategically about how each of those channels can be best served as you start to reanimate this business. And I think that open communication and really specifically talking about how do we get the drivers and the dock workers and the union members in on the dialogue. If something's not working, how do we hear about it and start to fix it immediately instead of waiting for it to fester and blow up? And I think we were lucky to have the credibility to do that with the union, but also it's trust on our part too. We trust that they're going to honor their word, and they trust that we will. And trust and good communication is the beginning of any relationship. And then I think as a manager, you really have to talk to everyone in your business, no matter if they're in the C-suite or if they sit at the front desk and sign in guests. The dignity of that job is important, or you wouldn't have a paycheck going to them. And what that means and what they contribute, and recognizing and acknowledging that, lifting up that work, I think is incredibly important. It's important that we respect that every one of these roles is needed to have a successful customer experience, to have sustainable, good paying jobs with great benefits, and have a company that, God willing, can outlast all of our lifetimes. I mean, that's really the goal here, right? Is to build something that outlasts us. And all we're asking is for people to consider that it doesn't have to end in a fiery liquidation of a 100-year-old company that employed 28,000 people. There's a chance to save this. It doesn't have to end that way. It can end with, you know, I'm a Methodist, as you know, a good resurrection story, and 'tis the season. So I hope that people will think about that, that we've got a chance to tell tens of thousands of working families in this country headed into the holidays. Just give us a minute. We're going to get this back, and those health, welfare, pension, and good union jobs are coming back your way. And for customers, choice, price relief, better service, and this brand that everyone loved so much can be revived. And if we do that, that would be something. I mean, that's a Christmas miracle for everyone.
That's a Hallmark movie right there.
Amen.
If only more CEOs thought like you do, and I got to tell you, I am pulling for you. Last question I've got for you. What can I do to help? What can our listeners do to help? What can, you know, like I said, former employees, what should they be doing? Who should we be yelling at? Let's start with that.
Well, I'm going to say probably the best thing you can do is raise your hand and your voice and tell your story. So if you worked for Yellow, if you put your kids through school on Yellow, if you put your kids in braces through Yellow, if you paid your way through college interning at Yellow, if you got your first job out of college at Yellow, tell people what that meant to you. Tell people why these jobs matter. Let's not let this get lost in a room where a lot of times working families aren't represented, right? Bankruptcy, by the time you get to that point, it's a lot of very technical, legal, and financial advisors. But at the heart of all of this, at the heart of every good business deal, it's about the people. At the heart of every good business, every good product, it's about the people. So people should tell their story. Tell them what does Yellow mean to you? Why do you think these jobs should be saved? And if you're the kind of person that has the willingness and time to write to your congressional representatives, write to your senators, do so and tell them why. Because in the end, this is a massive responsibility for those of us that want to try to revive those jobs in this company. We're going to need all the support we can get, but we're also going to need to remember the responsibility we're agreeing to take on. And as you know, in my family, that's almost a sacred responsibility. I went into business because the way I was raised was that creating a way for someone else to provide for their family was the noblest thing you could do for others. And that's just the way we were raised. I remember when my dad lost my job when I was young. He remembers when they almost lost their house because his dad lost his job, and it was saved by getting a custodial role in a UAW General Motors assembly plant just outside of St. Louis, Missouri. So we know what that feels like. As you know, we had to take Jack Cooper through a Chapter 11 restructuring in 2019. It was painful, but we protected every union job, everyone's retirement, everyone's health care, their union, their seniority. And we took it out of our hide to go through that restructuring. So for me, this is the ball game. This is why we do what we do. I hope your listeners will tell people their story. I hope that they'll contact, if they have a friend who used to drive for Yellow or for another company who's looking to come back, have them speak up, have them reach out, hit me up on Twitter or Instagram. We want to hear from you. We want people to see the face of these jobs and understand the stakes.
There you go. Sarah, I appreciate the time. I got to tell you, I'm in awe of you. I'm in awe of what you're trying to do, and I wish you the absolute best. And like I've said, anything I can do to help on this front, I am at your disposal. But thanks for the time.
You're very kind. Thanks so much for having me, Rick.
Sarah Riggs Amico, executive chairwoman of Jack Cooper. I got to tell you, again, I go back to this, just remarkable. What a remarkable woman. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1966. That was the day that the registered nurses of the Youngstown General Duty Nurses Association walked out of their jobs. Nursing could be a grueling profession, with long hours of physical labor for low pay. In Youngstown, the nurses were frustrated because there were inconsistencies in pay. Some recently hired nurses made more than those who had been working for years. Part-time nurses did not receive the same wage increases as full-time employees. They also did not feel that they had enough say in delivering quality care for their patients. When they asked to meet with the hospital's executive director to discuss their concerns, the nurses were rebuffed. They then contacted the Ohio Nurses Association Union and asked for help. Youngstown was a steel town, a union town, and the nurses were ready to join in the local labor movement. At first, the Youngstown Hospital Association refused to bargain with the union. But when the nurses threatened to walk out, negotiations began. After 2 months of talking at the bargaining table, major issues remained unsettled, including pay and union recognition. Fed up, the nurses called for a mass resignation. 305 of the 433 nurses turned in their resignations. Two-thirds of them were part-time nurses. They formed informational picket lines outside the hospitals. A federal mediator was brought in to settle the dispute. In the end, the nurses won significant gains. They received a more than 25% raise over 2 years. A grievance procedure was established for the first time, but most importantly, the union gained recognition and the right to bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions for the nurses and their patients. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, Sarah's point, I give the LTL industry and, you know, all the companies that I worked for, you know, Roadway Express, which eventually, you know, morphed into Yellow, you know, the credit for, you know, lifting me out of poverty and giving me the opportunity to do this little program. And a lot of the things that we've been able to do has been because of that union job. So I hope people will share their thoughts and stories. Let's quick go to the phones. I got Alice on line two. Alice, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
It's sad to think that tonight's the last night of the radio show, but the reason why I'm wanted to remind you that you need to let us know what time the new show is going to be on starting Monday.
Well, so Monday, the new show, the show is going to be 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time on Monday through Friday. As it is in the new year, we're going to be moving to an afternoon slot with a replay later in the evening. That's where we are right now.
Okay, and are we going to have the ability to call in? And is it going to be 1 hour or 2 hours?
It's going to be a one-hour recorded program. We were planning on doing some Facebook Live stuff with free speech. I want to keep some interactivity. I want to be able to have people, you know, talk with us. You know, the thought maybe, you know, a couple of nights a week after the show, maybe opening up on their Facebook Live, of doing things like that. But for right now, our goal is to do the best one-hour TV program on the airwaves.
Okay, and so that's Facebook. So are you going to still do Twitter or no?
Yeah, we're still doing, I'm still doing Twitter. We're not going to broadcast over Twitter. What we're going to do is we're going to make sure that free speech is where our content is, and that they're the ones pushing it out. You know, we've had some technical issues, and I'm just going to leave that stuff to the professionals now.
Okay, great. So now that we've got that out there, I guess we'll see you come Monday.
Yes, absolutely. Alice,
have a good one.
I appreciate you. Thanks so much. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is a bittersweet moment. I mean, the reality is I'm looking into the new year with great hope for the opportunities that we're going to be able to take on, having not to have to be sitting in this chair every night at 9 o'clock. But, you know, it's 18 years of live radio that I'm going to miss. And
you're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.